Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Hello and welcome to our Rivals show. Now, we do these for a lot of the big games, Manchester United, Everton. We did it for Leeds, in fact, and we put them behind the paywall as part of Tour Player. This is the one we did before the first game of the season against Manchester United, and it was a talk through the rivalry as it intensified through the 70s, 80s, and indeed early 90s. Mike Nevin, Steve Armstrong, Rob Gutman, and John Gibbons, all on fabulous form. It's a great listen. Absolutely brilliant stuff. And this, as I say before, is the sort of stuff we do on The Player all the time. We very much are only able to do this sort of thing because people do subscribe, but we wanted to put this out for free before the game against Manchester United this time around. Part two of this conversation is actually available behind the Tour Player as well. So if you like this sort of thing, the only reason, as I say before, we're able to do it is because we're supporting by the people who do subscribe. So sit back, relax, enjoy. This is the rivalry of Liverpool and Manchester United. Let's go.
It's the rival show. Well, it's so called. Now, we did one of these for Derby, didn't we, Mike Nevin? And it was popular. And
yeah.
So we thought, well, what other ones can we do? So we've done a bit of a list, and we're doing them sort of as they go throughout the season. So it's Man United next week, isn't it?
It is. It's interesting because the Derby one wasn't sent up as the rival show, was it?
No, it was just a chat about Derby.
But yeah, we spawned an idea out of it that we're probably we're lacking shows on the great rivalries that Liverpool have had with, you know, any number of clubs. But let's face it, certainly in the relatively modern era, there's no bigger rival than United, is there?
We're starting with a big one, but we will be going through them. John Macken can't join us, unfortunately, but a more than willing substitute is Mr. Rob Gutman, who's seen a lot of football. And because it's Man United, we had to get Steve Armstrong over. Hands across the M62 and all that. He's come over. He's already had a couple of beers with Heaton, so I reckon he's raring to go.
When you say Derby, as in Everton or County?
County.
How's that a rivalry?
Because they were strong in the 70s.
All right, so yeah. Okay.
It might have been a bit more contrived than this one.
Lacking in material, core material.
You'd be surprised. We did a lot, didn't we? Because Mac and had 3 pages of notes. You should listen to the Anfield Rap every now and again.
Yeah, I believe it's good.
Okay, we've had quite an extensive chat in the room about what we're going to do and what we're going to cover and things like that, because there's obviously a lot to cover. And I think what we'd like to focus on is kind of 97 to 92, so that 15 years before the Premier League when these boys were going a lot who were in the room, but also the rivalry really ramped up and it kind of gets to its height, if you like, sort of mid-80s, and then get a new lease of life when Ferguson comes in. So that's what we're kind of going to talk about, but we'll see how we go, and we'll do a little bit on the 90s and stuff like that as well, not least because that's the bit I remember. So I mean, the first big game I want to focus on, Mike, is the 1977 Cup Final, because my dad still moans about it and gets very upset, and when I was crying after the 1996 Cup Final, my dad consoled me with, don't worry, it wasn't as bad as 77. But generally before that, how from your memory or people you spoke to, how fierce a rivalry was it? Because there was talk from my father when he first started going that it was quite a healthy kind of rivalry, really, and there was a maybe more mutual respect there than there would have been in later years.
Yeah, first of all, your dad is right, 77, badly. I was 9 and refused to eat for 2 days afterwards, so we certainly felt it pretty acutely. But I don't think it was the type of rivalry that we're talking about today, or certainly in the mid-80s, because basically United weren't sufficiently strong enough at the time in the mid-70s, I don't think. I mean, aside from sort of cup successes, I don't think there was this sustained mutual hatred, if you like, that certainly was at work by the mid-80s. And historically, you know, my first memories will be, you know, sort of mid-70s, so just before that 77 final. And I particularly remember a YouTube clip I've seen of Bobby Charlton scoring at Anfield at about 69-70. And United would win 4-1, I think. And the cop applaud is third or fourth goal. And that wouldn't have happened at any point, really, in the time that we're going to be talking about where the cop are applauding United goals. That wouldn't happen, would it? For me, I mean, we'll go on to this, but it develops a little bit later. And I think Ron Atkinson had an awful lot to do with it for any number of reasons. But I think the lads will agree as well. I mean, I'll stop talking in a minute and hand over to the other capable chaps. But I think it was very much that on two different levels. For Liverpool, it was the insane jealousy that United got all of the press coverage while we were winning leagues. And I think from United's point of view, and Steve will speak better on this, really, I suppose from their point of view, then, you know, they were obviously jealous of the way Liverpool were stringing title after title and European Cups together, albeit that they'd won before us in 1968.
Does that sound about right to you, Steve?
Yeah, I think it's bang on. I mean, the sort of peaceful coexistence, you could go back quite a long way. There's a lot, I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it was Liverpool played Charlton which was their first game after the Munich air crash, and there was a lot of stuff waxed about how peaceful that was, how respectful it was. Obviously, there was the Matt Busby connection with Liverpool.
Yeah.
That carried on, you know. The big thing in the 60s was the socialising between Liverpool and United players. You know, United players would go to games at Anfield, vice versa, you know. So that certainly existed. And I think Mike's bang on. But I still think back in the 1977, it never got even... It didn't get to a level that was seen certainly in the decade after that, which we'll come to. But certainly from my understanding, the thing you've got to bear in mind there is United's trophy prior to that FA Cup win in 77 was European Cup in 1968, and they'd had a period in the second
relegation,
division.
Yeah.
You know, at which point, you know, obviously it was a bigger deal to United that than it was to them. And obviously Liverpool were on track for the treble in 77.
Yeah.
But obviously I wasn't there because obviously I was my first United Liverpool game came 2 years later at Goodison. But from people who've told me there that there was even at that game, despite, you know, getting done in a cup final, again the mutual respect thing was evident. But also there was kind of a lot of well wishing towards Liverpool who were going on to a European Cup final a week later or whenever it was. So yeah, I think Mike's bang on.
I mean, it's very strange to hear that now, Rob, considering everything the football clubs have been through since then, the games and the kind of vitriol, really, that even as kind of late as 1977, if you like, there was this "I'll go on and win the European Cup" type thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I come in as well. The thing my first memories of it were that United just weren't in contention then, so that it just wasn't fueled. I remember us beating at Christmas 79 or coming into 79, beating them 3-0 at Anfield, and it wasn't like the result of the season. I remember feeling the first sort of tremors of needle when they win at Anfield a couple of years later in about 81, and Arthur Alberston scores a winner.
Yeah, I remember that.
At the cop, probably at the cop end. And is that the end of the Sexton era or the beginning of the Ron Atkinson era?
I think it's the first...
Atkinson was 81.
Yes, it's the first one. So it's Ron Atkinson. Steve and I were having a little chat about this, and Steve's going to give his theory in a minute, no doubt, in some detail, I'm sure. But I'm with Mike in as much as my recollection was that under Dave Sexton, who United had in the late 70s, early 80s, and although he's a bit, you know, probably history doesn't reflect that well on him, but United do finish second to us once in that period. Yeah, Dave Sexton, his personality was one of quiet dignity, and he didn't fan the flames. And Ron Atkinson comes in. He'd rivaled Liverpool for a season as manager of West Brom. They'd finished second to us, I think, Mike. Is that right? 78-79. They're never going to catch us, but I think we needled him in that era. You know, Ron was... I think Ron, you know, he's much maligned for many good reasons, but he was a winner. And I think he arrived at Man United and thought, I'm here now, watch this go. And that was his attitude from the off. And, you know, and it never quite happened for him, but he was determined to be at the centre of a growing aggro.
Big Ron from Old Swan. I mean,
ironically,
what was that? What was that like as him as Manchester United manager generally, Steve? I mean, away from the rivalry, was he someone that the supporter base identified with? Did they take to him?
Yeah, I think if you look at the swashbucklings, you know, Mike will tell you this. You know, United have always kind of been this look, just play good football type of thing, and that'll get people happy.
Yeah.
They'd had the swashbuckling years of Doherty and everything that came with that. And that, you know, Tommy Doherty, despite, you know, a number of things, he's still one of the most highly revered United managers in history because of the style of football. You know, we had wingers absolutely going hell for leather at it. You then had this sort of utterly mundane period under Sexton, and it just bored United fans to tears. I mean, that season, his last seat, he got sacked after winning his last seven games.
I remember that. Really. But there was a perception around him that he was negative, a bit like Don Howe at Arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that. I mean, if you want to bring it to a more modern comparison, you got it's like the Van Gaal scenario. You know, ultimately he did all right at United if you actually weigh up from what he picked up to where he ended up. Similar thing with the Sexton. Atkinson kind of brought that sort of swagger back. You know, we were big in the transfer market. You know, we made a lot of big moves. He was quite flash with how he acted in life. He had this sort of champagne lifestyle. He was never off sunbeds.
Mr. Bojangles.
He was never off beds full stop, if you believe a lot of the rumours that were doing that out of the time. But he did. He kind of brought the sort of showbiz back to United. And that was kind of what people wanted. But I still think that everybody likes a bit of flash every now and then, but at some point you've got to back that up. And the problem we had in and around the era under Atkinson was if you think about what stoked the kind of rivalry amongst fans, Mike said it before, the whole thing was built on envy. Liverpool fans were envious of United for something, and United were envious of Liverpool for different things. Us, we just wanted success and to be where Liverpool were in terms of competing for titles, competing for European success. Liverpool were often envious of the fact that United were still putting more people through turnstiles. United were getting a lot more media coverage. And even local media were stoking out. You remember the Tony Wilson...
Granada's out of Manchester.
Yeah, you know, well, it wasn't just that. I mean, Tony Wilson did a Granada Reports with a Bruges rosette on before the European Cup final one night, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think there was definitely the envy there for different things. And that kind of almost, you know, it gave that part of not liking United another boost. The problem we had back then was, and you'll see it throughout the 80s, our record against Liverpool in the 80s was, you know, you beat us in 20 league games in the 80s, you won three.
Yeah, it was nuts,
you know,
wasn't it?
You know, and our record at Anfield in that 80s was four wins, five draws and a defeat. So on our day, we were able to compete with Liverpool. But the one thing that Atkinson was reliant on is we were just so reliant on one player, which was Brian Robson, and that's why it never panned out. But yeah, he absolutely stoked the flame, no doubt about it. I would probably challenge that the rivalry in terms of where it went to after that is far, far more deep-rooted in society than it is just the fact that Ron Atkinson rocked up and annoyed everybody.
I just echo practically everything that Steve said there. I mean, I think the thing about Atkinson, though, is that he, from the point that he picks up United in 1981, is that very quickly he has them challenging us for cups and titles. And I know they don't win the league, obviously, and that ultimately sees him done for. But, you know, in terms of, like, cup semi-finals and finals, you know, our paths cross, don't they, consistently during his management. Plus, as Steve says there, you know, what fuels our hatred of United, aside from the sort of the media and press coverage, is the fact that they're just beating us all the time in the key games, not just in the cups. It's in the league as well. I mean, the lost count of the amount of times Liverpool would win the league, but United would double Liverpool in the league. You know, they'd won at Anfield. I mean, Rob will remember as well. I mean, just so many times United would win at Anfield, and we were craving, you know, just the odd win against United, and we weren't getting them. And they were the ultimate Liverpool bogey team, really.
It's also from perspective now, people won't really understand, unless you were alive then, how big the FA Cup is. And Liverpool had never won the Liverpool hadn't won the cup since Shankly's time. Paisley had never won the cup. We had won the cup in 74. We're winning everything in Europe and in the league, and we really wanted to add the FA Cup in the mid 80s to sort of cement our dominance. And we have three big semi-finals in the 80s prior to Kenny coming in and finally getting us the cup. We lose to Arsenal after about four of them, but we have two against United, one in 79 and one in 85, and both go to replays, and both on they I think they heighten the tension in their own way, because there's so much needle attached to them.
Before we get on to 85, before we get on to 85, because Neil's coming to the room now and he's warned me that you just want to do 40 minutes on it. I'm not going to let you. I mean, so this 83 League Cup final then, is that a big game for Liverpool in terms of...
It was massive. Yeah, I remember, I mean, I'd have been 15 then, and I think we went to, me and my mate and my dad went to a pub before to have a pint, and I literally couldn't drink because I was too nervous. So I mean, if that's a barometer of how big a game it was.
I couldn't go because I'd played hockey from school all week. I'd been sick from the Monday, and I thought, I pushed it with really nothing much wrong with me till about the Wednesday. And I thought, I can get the Thursday out of this. And then Friday, I was beginning to feel all right, and I went into school, and I can't remember, we had two tickets, me and my brother, and my dad said, "You'd not be well enough to go to school all week. You're not going to Wembley." Fucking wanker.
That's sort of fable in there, isn't there?
Yeah, my dad could have sang, "You're not going to Wembley."
Do you know what? I listened to it on my own in my bedroom on the radio, and it was one of the best days of my life. I remember it bouncing around my own bedroom because we so nearly lost it, didn't we? Steve will remember.
I like the fact that Mike couldn't drink through nerves age 15.
They were very early drinking days, I will say. I mean, my maximum would have been three, but I couldn't finish one.
I had one puff on a spliff that day and I couldn't handle anymore. Now, the interesting thing about the League Cup was, obviously there was the, at the time you'd had a couple of European successes and United were still sort of hitting the wall. It was interesting because in the 80s, Liverpool only had what you'd class as two nemesises. One was the FA Cup and the other was Manchester United. So when those two things came together in terms of Liverpool v United in the FA Cup, that absolutely sent the thing through the roof. Mm. The League Cup, I can't remember. I'm guessing it was Milk Cup.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I mean, the fact that it was sponsored by Milk almost dumbs the whole thing down on its own, doesn't it? But it didn't quite have, for me, the intensity that an FA Cup game had. But where it was important for United was, that was our first ever League Cup final. Mm. And it was interesting because both sides, I think the League Cup had been going since the sort of early 60s. I think Liverpool's first final was like 78, 79.
78 it was,
78. Yeah. So the two most successful clubs in terms of, you know, silverware in this country's history were meeting... you know, it took us a long time to win it. In fact, we ended up not winning it till sort of 1991, I think it was, or 1992 it was. So yeah, that was a big deal for us. But again, it just showed the fact that Ray Wilkins captained United that day. We had a brilliant semi-final when we went to Arsenal. I think we won 4-2 at Arsenal. Coppell scored two. And then Robson, I can't remember if he got injured in the semi at Arsenal or the second leg at Old Trafford. I can't remember either way, but Robson was out of the final and none of us, you know, we were such a one-man team. And I can't think of any, but with the exception of Maradona, for wherever he was playing, whether it be club or country, I can't recall another one-man team to the level that United were at the
Whiteside
time.
Whiteside was emerging as your Rooney. He looked like he was going to be your Rooney, didn't he? And he scores that great goal.
Yeah, I think
he's really young.
Youngest player to score at Wembley.
Yeah, well, he did it in both finals that year. Because obviously we won the FA Cup that year, and I think he scored. I think he was 17 when he scored against Liverpool, and it was early doors. He was about 12 or 13 minutes in, wasn't it?
Yeah,
such a unit, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he was. I think they often said Whiteside was, you know, he was 25 when he was 16. I mean, him and Robson for me epitomised what going to Anfield was all about in any game. And one of the things that I've said on this show when we've been talking about league games often is sometimes, you know, you want to go in there and it's great turning up and winning, you know, when Mata scores or where Forlan scores or, you know, where O'Shea scores. And that's been, but, you know, you look at them games, we were never in it and we didn't exactly rock up and take the fight to Liverpool. Pete Robson and Whiteside used to go to Anfield and just say, "We're going to kick the fucking shit out of a lot of you." You know, they were hard as fuck. And I remember being
Remy
on
Moses
show.
As well.
Remy Moses was, he was, you know, there was plenty of people there. And listen, Liverpool weren't exactly shy, but, you know, I remember one show I was on with Mike ages back, it was a pre Liverpool, and he said, you know, United used to turn up in the 80s and they were nasty. They were a nasty team to play, and Robson and Whiteside epitomised that.
There was a game, the game in 88 where Dalglish famously berates Ferguson and sort of says, speak to me sort of baby daughter about, because he was bleating about the refereeing of that game. That game, Whiteside came on with Liverpool winning 3-1 with the express instruction to start booting people. Yeah. And it completely disrupted Liverpool. And I think United were down to 10 men, weren't they, as well? Yeah. And yet they still got a 3-3 draw.
The thing is that when Colin Gibson gets sent off, that doesn't... It's the same as bringing a 12th on.
That's actually the hardest to take in many ways of those 80s league results. Because finally, we were the most enjoyable to watch we'd been in that whole decade. We were properly thumping you. We were 3-1 up. Man had scored a beauty. Man sent off. Nothing was going to spoil that.
It was your best football team that 88-89 era was the best, apart from 08, which for me is still the best team that I've seen Liverpool play. Even though it wouldn't have beat the sort of 81-84 this team, it wouldn't have beat it because it had tried to play well and it had got kicked off the park, rightly so. But the game you mentioned, at the time, McMahon, despite all the glamour of the players that were around him, he was just bossing games for fun, right? And he was playing out of his skin. And Whiteside got sent on and he maimed him. He proper stamped on him. And it's probably my favourite ever Anfield memory, you know, put into... Because it summed up what... He went on as a supporter to play football. You know, he was like, we're getting leathered here. We're getting played off the park. We went one up within a couple of minutes. Robson scored. And then he went on and just stamped on McMahon. And McMahon just fell in a heap. And it was almost like the fight went out of Liverpool in that game. But that's what people like Whiteside did, you know. And certainly in the 83 Cup final, at the end of the day, if Robson had been on that pitch, it would have been a different outcome, I think, potentially. I'm not saying we'd have won it, but I think the way the game panned out would have been differently, without a doubt, because they came as a bit of a pair.
Well, I was saying this to Steve beforehand, but I've got such a strong memory of this. In the after-match interview, this is how big Ron's personality was suddenly all over that club. Now they weren't taking being second to us, not in his head. And in the interview afterwards, we've beaten them. He's gutted because we've turned the game around and, you know, and by extra time, we've properly won the game. And he goes... I did Motson's interview. He goes, I tell you what, John, we're going to come back in here in May, meaning Wembley, and we're going to swamp the place. That was this defiant message.
I remember that. Yeah.
And they do come back and they do win the cup. And it was sort of, I don't know, it actually made me as a Liverpool fan think we were. It made sort of hairs on the back of my neck stand. I know, a little bit frightened. Because the one thing every pre-season, I started scared of United because they had more money than us. And they'd go out, I remember one summer, they'd buy Jesper Olsen, who'd been a star for Denmark, and Arnold Muren, who was one of the midfield players of the game that time. And they'd buy a forward, and you go, for fuck's sake. And because we'd been good, we'd only tinker. So you'd think the gap can only close here. So it was a very worrying thing.
There was a deep-rooted fear in Liverpool fans that United would eventually win this title after 27 years, as it turns out, and you wouldn't see them for dust again, and that sort of came true.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But certainly at the time, I think that 83 final. I mean, and there was controversy as well, wasn't it? McQueen got brought down by Grobbelaar. Grobbelaar probably should have been sent.
It's hard
to get annoyed about that though.
Yeah,
for me, you know what I mean. I just love anything that involves violence and people doing.
Is that a precursor to the slightly abbreviated 85 chapter?
No, but it was like Harold Schumacher esque, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was just
exactly.
You know,
it was a bad foul.
Yeah, but you know, I if that had been the other way around, you'd be the thing I say to United fans. Look, you can bleat on all you like about how terrible it was, but if that had been the other way around, you'd have been like, you know, you'd have wanted a knighthood. For whoever was in United's net at the time, was it Gary Bailey? You know, you'd have wanted a knighthood for it.
It's mad that he was in that position on the pitch, Gordon McQueen, centre half.
He was injured, wasn't he?
He was, that's right. They sent him up. And he gets clear, I think, just across the halfway line. He's only five yards inside the Liverpool half, clean through. Not a big lummox of a centre half.
But again, it was an easy thing to be outraged about, you know what I mean? It was, if it had been, it's one of them things to say, look, I would say it's a simple formula. If you'd be offended the other way around, would you be? You know, everybody would have been cheering him off the pitch for that. Yeah. So I think deep down, though, Liverpool, what it epitomised, United had fight and battle. Liverpool always had that touch of class that was always going to rise above it. And you look at the two goals in that final. I mean, one was Kennedy from an absolute pile driver, and then Ronnie Whelan's, you know, which, you know,
Yeah, still gets replayed today, doesn't he?
Does it really? How good?
Whelan, and again, Whelan's curled it. Brilliant goal.
Very
he
much
gets
so.
Against. Is it, does he hit Moran's legs or something? In the
yeah, it comes thing? Back off him. Yeah, yeah. That's
right, we'll stop it. We'll stop. Let's do 85.
Right, okay. You've been very good. You've talked for 22 minutes. You've been good, boys. So I'm going to let you do 85. But I mean, the one that I guess people talk about is the FA Cup semi-final replay, isn't it? But presumably,
first games, both games.
Well, let's do the first one first.
What a game that was.
Were they both at Main Road or was
no? First is Goodison.
Goodison, okay.
First is Goodison, and I remember. So I think I had a ticket on my, as you did back then. I seem to have so many away tickets on my own. I get one for me and my mates, but we wouldn't be able to sit together because of the way it worked out.
Do you think they let it? I mean,
it wasn't deliberate.
But do you think they'd have it at Goodison now, if it was still semi-finals at neutral venues rather than this Wembley business? Did they still do the Goodison, or did they send us to Aston Villa or something?
I think back then it was about convenience.
It was geography, wasn't it?
Yeah. Now it's about who can we get more into. So no, I mean,
in 79, the same fixture. It was Main Road to start with, and Goodison for the replay.
In
85, it's the other way around. So there was a symmetry to that.
But
it was about geography, and the FA weren't asked in those days about inconvenience of fans. It was what was sort of best for everyone, by hook or by crook.
That's amazing.
So the first one's at Goodison.
If it was amazing about that game, is we were awful, really, for 80% of it, Liverpool.
Yeah.
We're playing in yellow, and they're in front for most of the game, I seem to remember. And then Ronnie Whelan scores that stunning goal, doesn't he, to equalise.
Unbelievable goal.
He just bends one in from, it must 35 yards, I think. And it's in the last, it's virtually the last kick of the game, isn't it? And we go, it's one of my favourite celebrations of the entire 80s, that, you know, on my own, but with strangers all around me, became my best mates. And then they go on to dominate extra time. I think Strachan scores. Is it Strachan who scores in extra time?
Stapleton.
Stapleton. And then we repeat the trick. Just as dramatic a goal in injury time, in extra time. Yeah. Walsh scores. And what's the build-up to it, Mike?
Dalglish crosses it in. There's an offside, actually. The linesman
put his flag
on.
For offside.
Yeah, and he put his flag down. Yeah. This is the trigger for Atkinson to go bonkers again after the game. But
we were laughing at
it. Dalglish whips across in. Rush heads brilliantly at the far post. Bailey saves it. And it just drops down on the line. And there's like there's a pregnant pause. And like the ground just sort of falls silent for about, you know, it's like a millisecond it is actually. And Walsh just comes in his own words, he bundled it in.
If you remember this thing about the offside, it was George Courtney. And everybody at the time was just convinced that, you know, I mean, you talk to some people, you'd think that he was your leading scorer before Christmas that season.
In the Rivals show about Derby County, I was slating George Courtney for the same reason.
Yeah,
but it's, you know,
exactly, everybody's got a perception of it. But George Courtney, there was a flag for offside and he ignored it. So, yeah, it was. But the interesting thing about that game was, if you think of. We'd both had European games the week before. You'll know better than I will, but I'm pretty sure you beat Panathinaikos in the week. I'm sure you leathered them 4-3 or 4-0. Okay, so you had that. United got dumped out of whatever it was. I think it must have been the UEFA Cup or the Cup Winners' Cup. No, it would have been the UEFA Cup if it was. And we got beat by Videoton in
Hungary.
Yeah, it was. So we'd had that kind, and it was, you know, on penalties as well. So it was one of them late into the night jobs. So both were coming on the back of European games, but obviously one had had the tough trip and obviously the late night and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think. But United just turned up, as they often did, and raised the game for Liverpool. I mean, Joe Fagan was quite open about, we got away with absolute murder now. Mm-hmm. We were nowhere near the better side. Liverpool played far, far better on the Wednesday night at Main Road.
Yeah, that's right. Talking of absolute murder,
it was bad, wasn't it?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I mean, Walton, the streets of Walton around Goodison, I mean, it was like a war zone, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, and this was of the time. I'd see Steve said before about the sort of societal influences that as much were part of the rivalry. Certainly in the violent stakes. I mean, you know, there were tough times, weren't they? And you know, basically teenagers got their kicks through this sort of thing, but. A mate of mine from school actually wore, I don't know where he got this scarf from. He wasn't one of the cool cats, but he'd wear a scarf, whatever. And it had like a tinge of black on it. And in those days, United's favours, if you like, were red, white and black. Yeah. And if anything, ours were red, white and yellow. And he got his head absolutely stoved in by Liverpool fans. Mm. And he was screaming, I'm a Liverpool fan, look at my scarf. And it had Liverpool FC on it, but it had this tinge of black on. And that was reason enough for him to get a massive kick in.
And there was, but there were incidents like that going off all round the ground before and after the game. And during the game, I think we fired a flare, didn't we, into your end.
The big events there, the flare that got sent into our end.
It hit the scoreboard and then dropped down,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah, it was a shit shot, really. Yeah.
There was that,
I'm pretty sure. I think Jesper Olsen got hit by a missile on the pitch. It brings to mind. There was people getting slashed and knifed outside.
Golf balls with nails?
That was the spiky golf ball was what you brought to Main Road. But that was I don't recall the spiky golf ball being at Goodison.
Weapon of choice.
Yeah, but largely because I didn't see anyone get hit by one, but it doesn't mean they weren't there. The Main Road was that one. I mean, it's pretty evil when you think about it, that people were going to that level of thinking, it's a step up from the days of, have you got your wallet and your rattle and your flat cap and your scarf? Yeah, what have you got? Knife, yep, check. Spiky golf ball, check. It's a step up from that. But yeah, it was horrible. But I came from an upbringing where I quite liked the needle, but I liked the adrenaline rush and the fear of walking around on edge. And I guess it's largely because of that 85 week that I can't take this rivalry now seriously. In this, and when I say seriously, as in, obviously I want United to win, but I don't get out of my pram about it. I don't get upset about it because I know that it can never, ever be that fueled again. But I don't buy the fact that that rivalry stemmed from, people winning this, people being on the telly more, people having more people. I don't even buy this nonsense about, it stems back from the fact that you built a ship canal to get to get cotton out of here without. I don't buy any of that nonsense. It was an absolute product of what living in the Northwest was like in that kind of era. It was all about unemployment. It was about housing. It was about what you had coming through the doors in terms of all of the outpouring of all of the depression that people had socially came out in football. Unfortunately, the whole, you then throw in the combustible element of Manchester United v Liverpool, you chuck in there then also the FA Cup element, which at the time was probably as big as winning a title on a one-off event. The whole thing was just an absolute concoction ready to absolutely explode, and it absolutely exploded massively on the Saturday at Goodison to levels that you didn't think could even be ever reached again. And then Wednesday night it went up another notch.
Yes. What was the crowd splits like at these games? So was the more
we had the Gladys Street and the main stand. United had the Park End and the Bullens Road.
So that's about 64.
If you think about the four sides of the ground, what you had in two corners was Liverpool and United fans within spitting distance of each other. So there was a lot of that going on.
Did we have the Kippax at Main Road?
You have half the Kippax, don't you? So that was split.
Is that how it worked?
Yeah.
I was, again, separate tickets, but no, actually, it was us three of us had went, and two of us, and we'd only got our ticket in the United end. So this is, in the heat of all this, I was, so it's 85, so I'm 18, and we're in the United end, me and my brother. And we knew how dangerous that was. And I think we were brave. We'll just keep quiet. We're watching a football match. We're just glad we got in to see this semi. But then Paul McGrath, after about 20 minutes, Paul McGrath scores an own goal and we're winning. We've played okay and we're winning. And it was just gut reaction. We celebrated it. And instantly, coppers are in there and they lift me and my brother, and probably two or three others, Liverpool in. They lift us out. And I remember seeing some match of the day later. Excuse me, coughing, choking, thinking about this. Walked us along the touchline and just plonked us in the Liverpool end for our own safety's sake. And then I saw a match today. We passed the dugouts, and I'm giving it the big one.
Really?
Past the camera, yeah. Maybe it's on YouTube somewhere. I've never been able to look.
I'm sure you can get that. I'm going to find it.
Thing about the I got punched around like a pinball on the in the Goodison game. Everywhere I went, there was people wanting to hit me, and I was 16 at the time. I was getting hit by people three times my age. I mean, forcibly battered. And then you get up and then, you get your breath and then you get booted again. It was that bad. But, the adrenaline rush of walking into that in that arena as a supporter back then, it was great.
I think that's really true of fellas our age, basically. Mm. There's a lot of sort of glorified talk about the days of the violence, but it wasn't the violence that you fed on. It was the buzz.
Yeah.
It was, and my
fear.
First recollections of going to Old Trafford would be... an equal mix of fear but excitement. I mean, it was, I suppose it was the prospect that something terrible could happen. Mm. But getting back on the train afterwards, and you know, if you'd won, that was great. But getting out the place alive was a massive adrenaline rush.
The thing is, though, those two grounds, though, Anfield and Old Trafford, weren't exactly, because of the prestige of both clubs, they were good stadiums. They were generally well kept in terms of Goodison and Main Road were totally the opposite of that. And Main Road in particular, which I've often said is, you know, if you could pick the perfect arena to have football violence, Main Road would be it. You could get in any part of the ground, you could walk around any part of the ground, and then you get outside and
those
then
alleys.
It's just little alleys, rows and rows. You can, honest to God, you can get offside.
It was great,
in there.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was amazingly good. Yeah. And but the thing is how I went to that game on the Wednesday, having been booted around, you know, pretty much. You name a postcode in Liverpool on the previous week, and I got battered in it. I went to that game on a Wednesday, going, I understand. This is payback, and I'm going to do the. I'm going to do exactly what happened to me to everybody I see.
Yeah.
Did you, Steve?
No, I don't want to know.
Loads of people did, but that was. Yeah. But no, the point I'm trying to make is, it was a pretty fearsome experience that we had, and it was like if you take a boxing match where, you know, you have this brawl in the first and then you have the rematch, and then the rematch is always like another. It was like that, you know. I think somebody described it as, I can't remember who wrote it about at the time, but someone actually said if the atmosphere at Goodison at the weekend was electric, Main Road was nuclear.
Yeah, and you know. I mean, there was aside from sort of fish fights and probably stabbings and stuff like that, there was the way it just a glibly a few stabbings and that. But I mean, there was wanton violence as well against property. I mean, we'd lost obviously, which sort of crystallised a lot of this. So windows in houses,
two Mark Hughes
we're just getting.
He certainly scores the winner, Mark Hughes.
Robson
equalised.
Okay. But windows in houses were getting put in by Liverpool fans, and there was actually a double-decker bus that was on its side and on fire as we walked past it. You just put two and two together and you just thought, well, you know... it was on its side. It was blocking the road, and you just thought, well, you know what's happened there? The bus has been turned over and someone set fire to it. But you just, you know... Because of the times, it didn't seem that mad. Mm. I mean, you know, it sounds cracker saying that now, but it's genuinely true.
It's funny you mention that, though, because that point about you didn't bat an eyelid. A couple of years later, we were at Millwall away, and it was all going off down this street, and I watched a load of coppers go piling down, a lot of them on horseback. And then about a minute later, one of the horses come running back on its own with no copper on its back, and its tail was on fire.
Jesus
and I just, you know, when you stand there, and I just watched it go past, and I didn't even blink at it. It was like, that's what happened. You know, it was like, that's what happened. But that night, to me, just, for me, that was when the rivalry and the hatred and everything got to a peak that could never be surpassed. And I think there's been a lot more snide stuff ever since. If anything, it's got more snide since. You know, there was a lot of the, you know, that's when it was
since pretty organic, really, wasn't
Let's
it?
Let's talk about the song we used to sing at them then, because that was the high of it for me, is when we sung about Munich.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's to our eternal shame, that, but that was the height of it. And I tell you what, nobody who sung it then, Liverpool fans, even crossed their minds.
And
that
it wasn't,
wasn't
and
right
it's
thing
important
to
say as well, it wasn't
every,
a minority.
Every single one of us.
Everybody sang it. And with reference to that song, but what the exchange that I vividly remember at the replay at Main Road is that Liverpool, when they went one up, our part of the kit-packs was getting all cocky, and they started singing Atkinson, shut your mouth. And United came back with Shankly 81, and then Liverpool basically won this argument 2-1 by coming back with Munich 58. And it's if you get the clip on the TV, you can hear it as crystal clear. But that, again, it's terrorist banter, and it's the worst use of banter as a description.
And really, it's probably needs pointing out as well that this is 27 years after the Munich air disaster, so it's quite. There'll be people there in that ground who would have remembered it. It's about the same as Hillsborough is to now, really. Yeah. And I don't think the disasters are the same because.
They're completely different things.
But in terms of memory, in terms of time past, I mean, it's nothing really. It's a generation.
No, but I think the key thing is that the generation that were at the height of all this chanting, you know, it wasn't our generation.
No, it felt like ancient history to us. It felt like Second World War to me.
I'm at pains to say I'm not defending it in any way.
Yeah.
And I'm as guilty of it as anyone.
I've never known a Liverpool song sung with such passion and such gusto ever before or since as Who's That Dying on the Run?
Yeah, I mean, it's sick looking
biggest
back.
Biggest ever song.
But then, you know, I mean, Shankly 81 was getting banded around by loads of people as well. And I think, again, you know, we can do
it. You had a tune to the same, same tune.
People can do a show about, you know, tragedies here, tragedies there. This song got sung, that got sung. You know. I think everybody knows. It is moronic, and football brings the knobhead out in people better than anything else in the world. You know, and unfortunately, back then, football was an environment where it was all right to do that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? It's, you know, I don't get offended about stuff like that, whether it's about United or I just pity people who are like that nowadays, because you think, do you know what, you should, you know, this generation is a lot more educated, has a much better lifestyle, has had a lot better upbringing than we had. Back then, you put it down to, you know, social unrest, you put it down to social ignorance, you put it down to general, you know, the way things were back then. It was, you know, you can pinpoint to a lot of things in the sort of 70s and the 80s, whether it be racist humour on television, homophobic humour. It was just kind of, you know, you see documentaries laughing about it on the telly, and it was all right in the 70s, and you're sitting there recoiling in horror. You can do the same at sort of football, the same sort of thing. I think deep down, though, it was when the rivalry was starting to spiral into areas that became pretty nasty and pretty pretty unpleasant, really. You know, and I don't like songs about that sort of stuff. I don't like people who get... you know, I don't think one-upmanship, and this is the other thing about the United-Liverpool rivalry, when you have a one-upmanship rivalry, you've got no control over where that might go until people stop. First of all, it starts about we play better football than you, then it's about we've won more than you, then it's about we play better football than you, then it's about we have more people watching you. There's no ceiling to it, and then it does unfortunately start to disappear off into realms that you just can't control. And you know, the modern day versions of all of this kind of shite, as we well know, is pretty despicable, really. But you know, I think back then, though, I still put it down to the fact that as much as it was wrong, you could definitely pin ignorance to it, and you could definitely pin just how generally people felt about life in general to it. Whereas now, yes, but better behaviour from people.
To put it in a time context as well, obviously Heysel happens at the end of this season, and I know that was when I grew up in those terms, if you like, and it's a lot of Liverpoolians along with me. And then obviously we have Hillsborough as well, which just reinforces all of that. And I think that's why Steve's absolutely right to say that, to be honest with you, the modern day rivalry, you can't even speak of it in the same breath. It's entirely different. And I remember somebody said, trying to explain why the rivalry had changed, that, you know, it was Liverpool and Manchester lads who had this shared interest in a lot of things other than football, music and clothes and what have you. Whereas a fight now or a dispute Liverpool-Man United is liable to be between a lad from Belfast and a lad from Warrington. And, you know, either might be the Liverpool fan or the Man United fan. But it's just changed. I mean, it's a different world, basically.
It's a good point. I mean, it's worth stressing, outside of the confines of the contest, if you lived in Liverpool back then, you'd be in Manchester all the time. I was going to the Hacienda. I think it didn't cross my mind that I was going into the belly of the beast. You know what I mean? I was having a night out in Manchester where the music was cool and the people were cool. Didn't even care. Of course, I suppose you logically connected the two, but not emotionally. You didn't think, okay, I wasn't going to wear a Liverpool flag to go to the Hacienda,
I can't stand that Manchester is full of shit chants. I think that's sort of modern day moron like behaviour, and because it just isn't. You know what I mean? I mean, and it just pisses me off that people still want to sing that sort of chant.
I think when you bring chanting into it, full stop. You know, I mean, I've got an issue. I've got no issue with somebody who wants to kick my face in. I've got no issue with it whatsoever, because it happens quite a lot, especially in my own house. but I have an issue with a grown man putting his hand up to me saying five times. I've got no issue with the fact, you know what, I don't care if Liverpool win 5, 10, 15 European Cups. They can win back-to-back trebles for all I care. I genuinely wouldn't be bothered, and it would not change my life one bit. The fact, though, that there are these childish people out there who this is it. Again, I bring it back to this. The whole thing is about one-upmanship, about two cities that are 35, 40 miles apart, and it's pathetically childish that ultimately keeps going into levels that I think become, you know, because this whole banter piece, it's one of the worst words in the world, and it's almost like an excuse to be just an horrible bastard and get away with it under the heading of banter. It's just not right. Unfortunately, you know, people just need to sort of grow up and grow out of that. And I think a lot of our generation knew that in after that sort of 85 era, it started to, I think, it didn't disappear. It didn't just disappear, because obviously what you then had was United went into a period of a little bit of decline after that. Liverpool carried on, you know, who knows what would have happened after Heysel if you'd have carried on being able to compete in the European Cup. You know, your five could have been probably seven or eight, maybe even more. Obviously, you know, we weren't in a position to be able to do anything regardless of that. But, you know, I think when you got to the end of the sort of 80s, the gap between United and Liverpool on the pitch, I remember saying to Neil once, we won the FA Cup in 1990, and you could just get the sense that Ferguson was starting to get the team moving. When I went to Anfield, I think it was either our first or our second away game, it was early doors in the season, it was September, we were up against that Liverpool team of that had Beardsley and Barnes and everybody else. We were three down after like 25 minutes, having played really well, and you just thought, God almighty, this is never, ever going to end this. You know what I mean? I've never felt going into a ground so close to being, do you know what, are we getting back into this kind of rivalry where we can compete on the pitch then? And I think what the impact of that was on the crowd, though, was that kind of rivalry that you saw growing through the 80s, football and disappointment about football suddenly started to become quite important to people. Whereas in the sort of 80s, do you know what? You'd have been, Liverpool fans would have still done, if you'd won no titles and no European Cups in the 80s, you'd have carried on doing what you'd have always done. You'd have turned up en masse. You'd have been going here, there and everywhere on the continent, doing the grafting and getting all the gear and bringing it all back, because that's what people, lads from the Northwest, did. Football started to become a bit more important and a bit more serious to people towards the back end of the 80s. And people did start to take what was going on the pitch a little bit more seriously. And, you know, that rivalry off the pitch in sort of the 70s and the 80s started to disappear a little bit.
It's been superseded by the actual football, hasn't it?
That it became back then, I think. Yeah. And it coincided with, you know, one of your sort of better sides. And you know, but then that's what Ferguson got onto for me, was because for me, the modern day stuff, where it got, Ferguson stoked that more than anybody. It's, you know, surprised to hear you know, well, I'm not surprised when you mentioned Atkinson, but fucking hell, Ferguson.
Oh, no, he definitely did.
Proper stoked that up and brought, I mean, he was
pretty much the first thing he did, wasn't it?
Again, I can understand having a name and having a target and stuff, but he kind of brought that almost that vitriol from the stands and the terraces and in the cities. And he, you know, and I think one of his comments at the time was, it's always been there, it's been like that since the 1800s. Well, it hasn't. You know, most people could talk quite openly about how the coexistence between the two clubs was pretty strong up until the late 60s, early 70s, even into that sort of 77 Cup final period. And he, for me, he definitely took that on to another level.
I think he came with that, the pain of that defeat that we gave him at, when he was at Aberdeen.
That was
one of the things, when he comes down, I'm not sure when the effing perch comment comes out, but it was a lot later, I think, wasn't it? But certainly the mindset to get one over on Liverpool was there right from the very off. And
he fancied himself, that his Aberdeen side were quite something special. He'd done something Clough-like in Scotland to win, even more so arguably, to win Aberdeen the league and break the old firm stranglehold. And I think he fancied them to be the Borussia Dortmund of their era, I think, in his own mind. And we go up there and we win narrowly, but effectively, with a lovely goal from McDermott. And to get back to Anfield, I think he's still in the ties, making his name in Europe, and Liverpool wipe them away 4-0. And it rankles with him. And when he gets that job, that dream job, the biggest job in English football, which Man United wasn't, he goes, it's Liverpool. It's all. He was obsessed. And I think the fact that Kenny's there as well, the Glaswegian, does his head in.
Well, if you think about that before he, because it was interesting, you take the 86 World Cup, which he managed after Jock Steen died.
He left Dougleish out of the squad, didn't
he? Well, Hanson was the one he left out, and then as a result of that, he started.
But Dougleish was injured, wasn't he?
Yeah. But it was obvious then. You mentioned that Aberdeen game. Michael Grant's book, Fergie Rises, which is a great read. I mean, if you want to get inside the mindset of someone who's a winner, if you can take out the fact that it's a manager that's obviously put Liverpool through the mangle a little bit, and it's quite a fascinating read into the mindset of him. But you're absolutely spot on. The chapter about that night where Liverpool got Aberdeen got absolutely taken to pieces, it wasn't so much about he actually idolised how Liverpool did things. That was like the benchmark that he had to adhere to. But what really rankled him, there's a great story in that chapter about a game where Souness rocked up at the play. Ferguson got them all back to a hotel and said, right, you know, you can have a meal together and you can have a drink, that's it, you know. And Souness wandered in on the jolly, you know, with his, like, you know, his sheepskin and all this kind of stuff, quite deliberately trying to stoke it and work. And apparently, there's a lot of quotes from Aberdeen players who were saying you could, like, they were all laughing, like, going, like, you know, behind the headmaster's back, because they could see the steam coming out of his ears. It's almost like he carried that level of anger right away into his United career. And obviously, the end product of that and what it became was obvious. But yeah, I absolutely think you're right. I mean, if you read that chapter, it's quite a fascinating read about how that stoked what was the passion inside him, that Liverpool were the benchmark and I'll do whatever it takes, I will stoke up anything that gets us back into that situation. Yeah.
And I wonder as well about how much this, as I said before, this sort of constant fear that United, you know, eventually overtake us, because they are in essence probably just that slightly the bigger club, I would say, in some senses. That might rankle with some Liverpool fans, but you know, if you look at the crowds throughout...
In national terms, they are England's
and club. And they were, and what made United that national club was Munich, wasn't it? And the outpouring of sympathy. And I think Liverpool have become more of a widely supported club since Hillsborough as well, for the same reasons of sympathy. But I think this constant fear that they might usurp us at some point, I think that actually makes our fall more dramatic, because when it happens, and it's United that, you know, win the league in 93... And that sort of coincides with us really, really sort of imploding under Souness. And then there's 93 and 94, Souness goes. And then when Roy Evans takes over, then, you know, he's got a job on, really, to you know, sort of try and get back to the levels that we're at, what we had been previously with United and the rivalry. And he actually manages to do that. So that the 96 cup final, by that stage, I distinctly remember this, on the day of that 96 final, the bookies odds, I mean, you know, you're a betting man, Steve, it was 6-4, the pair of them, because Liverpool had recovered so quickly under Evans. And bearing in mind that United side that went into that game with Cantona at his absolute peak, that was no small feat. Mm. So that actually sort of re-engendered the rivalry a bit, albeit what we were saying before, that it was predominantly football-based now.
I think if you look at, I think it was a bit of a, it was almost like every year there was something Liverpool and United related. Then you had this... There was a couple of kind of big events. So, I mean, you mentioned 96. The 92 league game where United...
Yeah. The 3-3?
No, the 92
league game. The one where we sort of
2-0.
Oh, stop you winning the league. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think it was either... It was the third of four games in 10 days for United because of fixture congestion and they just ran out of steam and all that. But obviously... That for me that night was the delight that we saw. That's when I knew United were going somewhere, because I was at Anfield watching our title. I knew United were going to win a title soon. You could just see it, you could sense it, you could feel it. But when I saw the delight, Liverpool always delighted in winning stuff.
Mm.
What I was watching for the first time ever was Liverpool delighting in someone else.
The definition of a Pyrrhic victory, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
It was relief and it was gloating. Mm. Yeah. But it was gloating based on something quite flimsy, really. Because we'd been shite that season. We finished sixth. And it was actually a bit of a shock that we beat United. And the only thing, really, I mean, and this was the irony of it all, is that, you know, we've gone through the 80s getting beat regularly by United, but not to league titles. And that, all of a sudden you've got this role reversal where United are challenging for the league. We're sixth or seventh, and yet we win the game. But I agree with Steve there. There was this huge sense that that this time had come when United would potentially overtake us.
But I was walking out of that ground thinking, everybody thinks, what must it be like walking out of the ground, and thinking that must have been the ultimate. I walked out of that thinking, I'm all right here, you know what I mean? I can see, I knew that we were coming like this on the stairs where Liverpool was concerned, and you just think, today was maybe the day that we passed. We might not have a title for it, but you just knew that that was going to come. And, you know,
well, I mean, United really should have won that league title, because it was Leeds' year, wasn't it?
That rankles.
I mean, you know, the trotted out phrase, the league table doesn't lie. I think it did that year. United were the best team in the country. And obviously they go on to win it the next year.
We clung to it. Although it was mainly about this relief of denying United that title, because I remember them selling T-shirts outside at Anfield going, Terry Waite coming out of prison, and United still haven't won a title, it was 26 years. We were very much delighted with that ongoing statistic. Even the way today we sort of laugh about Everton's trophylessness, but much more so. And the fact that we'd stopped United, we'd had a bad season, so it was a real insult to injury for them to be winning that league. So it was a major relief. But also the fact of beating them was also something for us to cling to, go, all right, we can write that season off. I think we were going to win the FA Cup that year
as well.
So we thought, OK, we won the FA Cup, we've had a bad season, but we did, you know, stop them winning the league. We've shown we beat them. Maybe they aren't really all that. So we were kidding. So I was all over the show there. I can see why. If I was Steve, you'd go, of course United were better than Liverpool that year. Of course Liverpool weren't just going to catch back up. But at that moment, it felt like, that is a relief. This may not be the end of the world here.
And let's face it, the season after, United win the title and Liverpool finish eighth. And that really sort of says it all in terms of the directions that the two clubs were taking under Ferguson and Souness, respectively, at the time.
But you think about the way football was going then as well, though. We were entering an era of you know, happy clappy, sanitise this, sanitise that. Obviously, the game needed to sort itself out because of obviously things that had gone on, and it couldn't have carried on to the levels of what we saw on nights like, because I mean you mentioned 85 in our semi-final. 85 was also the year of Heysel. 85 was also the year of Bradford Fire, Luton Millwall, you know. Yeah. I mean the whole thing and everything, you know, all we were doing was just adding another tick to Thatcher's yep everything that, well, you know, we were just, the whole of the game was playing into the hands of somebody who hated it, you know what I mean, and she wasn't exactly going to do anybody any favours, as we subsequently went to find out. But the one thing though that, you know, that I still think back, and you know, that Steve Curry, who was writing for one of the papers that night, he described that 85 night as, he just said it was an attacking slugfest of a game of football played by proper men in front of proper men that sent, and the atmosphere sent a shiver down your spine. And I haven't seen or felt anything like that. That description, everybody I tell that to about it, and I go, yeah, he's spot on. Even ever since then, I've seen United do this, that, and the other. I've seen us win everything. I've never had a night like that. I've never had a feeling like that. And, you know, you kind of felt that going into that era that we've now started to chat about, that it just wasn't going to be quite the same as it was back then.
Yeah, you forget football nearly. I had a feeling after 85, around that era, that football could just end. There was so much on the telly about, so many sociologists getting dragged out, so much talk of the hooliganism when English fans were going abroad, the hooliganism back at home, just, you know, the fire, then Hillsborough. In that period, do you think they could call a halt to football in this country within 5 years at any time?
There was a quote.
Well, she fucking would have done if she'd have got away.
Yeah, but not just, I think British society was up for, middle class society was up for ending football. Yeah.
There was a quote I used in the 85-86 book, which I can't quite remember it precisely, but it was in one of these sociological essays around the time, and it was football as a slum sport. Played by slum people in front of slum supporters in slum stadia. I think that's not quite it. I might have had an extra slum in there just for reinforcement. Yeah. But it was, you know, that was the perception, and it wasn't really far wrong, was it? But other than castigating a class, I suppose, for all of the deals that you know, Steve was talking about before.
Okay, should we leave it there? We wanted to finish in 92, and we sort of have. There's obviously a lot of classic Liverpool Man United games after that, but football kind of changes and the rivalry changes as well. Steve's quite right to point out that the 92 is a bit of a watermark in that, unfortunately, we start celebrating United not winning nearly as much as we do Liverpool victories, because they're quite rare. But thanks a lot to the boys in the room, that was really interesting. I feel like I haven't really done anything apart from press play, but,
well, you haven't.
You lit the touch paper, John.
I'll celebrate.
You tipped it over nicely, like a good holding midfielder who's just facilitating.
Like a good chat show host, wasn't he? You just let it flow.
That's
what it's fine. I've sat here with like Muhammad Ali with Rod Hull and Emu.
You've got to leave it at that.
Nice one to Mike Nevin, Bob Gutman, and Steve Armstrong. We might be partying, you never know, but I think that was just about perfect.
That was the Rivals. A huge thank you to Steve, especially for coming over and giving himself over for that. But also Mike and Rob as well for speaking honestly. John for holding it all together. I said to John afterwards, do you feel as though the show went well? He went, well, you just put a microphone in front of these fellas and they go. And I think you'll all have heard that, as I said, before the thing began. That was originally a tour player show, a subscriber-based show. £5 a month for that, and 30, 40, 50, perhaps even sometimes 60 other shows that we do right the way across the month here on the Anfield Wrap. We're really, really proud of the offering that we do across the board. So hopefully that's given you a flavour of some of what you can get behind there as well. Some of the time it's tactics, it's current football, it's looking at transfers. Some of the time it's looking at where we've all come from and how this whole game of ours, this special thing of ours, works. Please take the time to consider subscribing, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. This has been Neil Atkinson. Huge thanks again to Steve, to Mike, to Rob and to John. I really hope you enjoyed the Rival show. Sports Social Podcast Network.